The Giant's Gamble. Chapter 5. Next time, a rhinoceros. The companions spent the next few days of travel getting to know each other better. They even managed to press Evelyn for more details about her young, dark past. She simply told them her family wasn't nice and she ran away in her 14th year, never to see them again. She pointed out that she never wanted to see them again, and though Rune wanted to ask her for a specific reason, he feared the answer. If it was anything like Destra's story, he didn't want to know the details. Thinking again of Destra, after so much time, left his stomach roiling with shame, and he pushed away the memories. "Killian?" Rune said quietly to his friend. "Yes?" the sailor asked, rubbing his eyes as he set aside his book. "I never meant to have a direction," he said. "What do you mean?" the human asked. Rune sighed and stood. "Never mind," he scratched his head. After an awkward hesitation, he headed outside to take over Opal's watch. The sailor shook his head in confusion and returned to his book. "Anything?" Rune asked the Genasi as she leaned over the 1,000-foot drop. The castle drifted through the thick, puffy clouds, sending a chill through Rune as he pulled his cloak tighter around him. Opal turned her head to him and smiled. "It's hard to see much up here," she said, and he nodded in agreement. "Are you all right, being here?" he asked her. She thought for a moment, then nodded her head. "Yes," she said gently, "though I do miss the trees." Rune paused. "I'm just not so sure," Opal gasped, cutting him off. "Look," she pointed, and Rune caught sight of something large passing through the clouds. It was there for a moment, then disappeared. "Killian?" Rune shouted. "Everyone, we may have company." The shape swooped back into sight and sent Rune stumbling back in shock. A massive silver dragon with figures clutched in its talons pierced the cloud cover and dropped its burden onto the lower deck of the tower, near where Opal and Rune stood. The dragon opened its maw and roared, then beat its wings upward and went to land at the top of the tower, now out of sight. Opal and Rune went scrambling back through the tower as the others rushed toward them. "What is it?" Killian asked, eyes alert and wild.
Dragon, Rune squeaked.
Killian stared at him for a second, and Opal nodded to confirm. "Zephyros!" the sorcerer shouted. "Dragon!" "It dropped something just out there," Rune panted, gesturing through the door. Before anyone could ask what, a loud clanking sounded outside as whatever was dropped at their door pushed into the foyer. 6 heavily armored dwarves with severe expressions strode up the marble stairs. "We really need to lock that door," Rune said, not for the first time. Zephyros appeared overhead from his balcony.
"Did you say dragons?"
the giant boomed, and it was the most anger Rune had ever heard in the giant's voice.
"I hate dragons!" he shouted,
and as he did, the dragon tore through the giant wizard's hat atop the tower and roared down at him, its long, silvery neck coiling down and belching a thick plume of grayish smoke. The giant's griffins went screeching and fluttering away in fear. Zephyros raised a hand and shot a retaliating flurry of spells at the dragon.
"Oh no, the griffins!" Opal cried.
"Why are you here?" Thea demanded of the dwarves. "What do you want?" The dwarves ignored them and pushed past their group, drawing out vials from their cloaks and downing them. Slowly, the dwarves began to shift form, losing their substance and drifting upward as gaseous clouds. Before the final one transformed, he spoke.
"We come to the giant on behalf of Queen Dagnabeth."
They all looked around at each other in confusion. Evelyn cut her arms and raised her flaming rapiers.
"Do we fight them?" Thea asked quickly.
"They haven't done anything yet," Rune said, looking to Killian for advice. Killian shrugged and they all looked up as the dragon roared again and shot more gas at Zephyros.
"We must defend the giant," Killian finally said,
a chaotic bolt of energy appearing, crackling in one of his hands.
"How do we fight a bunch of clouds?" Thea asked quickly, drawing her blade and singing to its steel until it began to glow with power.
Opal lifted her hands and a gust of wind blasted from the door and hit the dwarves that were now clouds, dispersing them so they drifted through the walls of the tower.
"Friends, we have no wish to fight you," Killian said, "but we will if you don't explain yourselves."
The tiny clouds continued to drift and slowly inch upwards as they righted their course.
"Very well," the sailor said and threw back his arm, whipping a stretch of lightning across the room at the clouds.
It passed through them without effect. Killian cursed and threw the chaos bolt that still hovered in his other hand.
"Leave," Zephyros shouted down at the floating dwarf clouds, and there was a weight to his voice.
It was a spell, just like the one Rune had used only a few days back on the cultists.
But this one was much more powerful. The gaseous clouds instantly stopped floating upwards and began to sink and become more solid. Evelyn poked a hand into the air, and a larger, ethereal hand made of dripping ice thrust into one of the clouds, fog spilling out around it. Opal bent and shimmered as she took the form of a lithe, spotted jaguar. She snarled and waited for the clouds to reform. Killian backed up a few steps and twisted his arms over his head until a swirling wind formed around him in a howling sphere of storm. While all this happened, Rune conjured a sacred flame in one hand, waiting for the dwarves to attack. They had yet to do anything, though the dragon continued to belch gas at Zephyros, whom, it now seemed, had gone invisible and was shouting, "Confounded dragon!" which Rune could barely hear over the rushing of Killian's spell. The dwarves formed one by one back into their humanoid shapes and began running for the exit, bowling past Rune and the others. Rune released his sacred flame. Opal leapt in her jaguar form to push one to the ground, and Killian stood in front of the entrance, barring their escape. It seemed the command spell Zephyros had laid on them was quite the force to be reckoned with. They defended themselves against the dwarves as they tried to leave. Rune cast a few spells to try and hold them back, but they pushed through the magic. "We need to catch one," Rune yelled to Thea, and she nodded. "We need to question them." What was it about this particular cloud giant that made him so popular with all these strange cults? Opal's cat form was batted away with a heavy dwarven arm and splint armor. She yelped and sprawled to the floor, a large gash across her whiskered face. The dwarf then drew up his axe and began cutting at her. Opal tried to skitter away, but the marble flooring was too slick, and the axe landed heavily, cracking open her feline skull. There was an ashy light and a flash, and the Genasi transformed back into her humanoid form. She stood, shaking but unharmed. The dwarf hesitated for a moment, giving the Genasi room to draw her bow and take a few limping steps back. The dwarf charged before she could fully arm herself and swung again with his heavy axe. The Genasi fell and remained unconscious, a pool of blood spilling generously out onto the floor. Rune quickly sent his duplicate running toward her to stop the bleeding. Meanwhile, he and Thea were casting spells at the dwarves while Evelyn ran through them and cut at them, an irritant more than anything. The dwarves moved slowly in their armor, but they were well protected. From within his torrential wind spell, Killian threw daggers and cast shattering spells, sending the dwarves back a few steps as they continued to push towards the door. "Stop this madness!" Killian finally yelled as he dropped his wind spell. With the hurricane winds gone, they could hear the battle at the top of the tower waging between the dragon and the invisible Zephyros. It was difficult to tell who was winning, and Rune wasn't sure if he cared all that much in the moment. "Explain yourselves," the storm sorcerer growled, and the dwarves looked to him, the madness of Zephyros' spell seeming to dissipate somewhat. "Why have you come here?" The leader of the dwarves, the one who had cut down Opal, slowly lowered his bloodied axe and held up a hand to the others, who stilled. "We are here to stop the cloud giants," the dwarf said. "Stop them?" Killian looked confused. "What has happened?" The dwarves all blinked, their expressions grave. "Our home has been attacked by the floating castles," a female dwarf with thick red hair explained bitterly. "I'm sorry to hear that," Killian said, dropping his hands. "We just came from Nightstone, where there was another attack from the cloud giants."
"So, you are on our side, then," the first dwarf said, straightening. "You are prisoners here."
Killian shook his head. "You have the wrong cloud giant. This one, Zephyros, he has not been involved in any of the attacks. In fact, he knew nothing about them until we told him." "He's helping us to stop the giant uprising," Thea added, lowering her glowing blade. The dwarves looked to the leader for guidance, hands still on their weapons.
"We speak the truth," Killian said steadily. "Now stand down, or we'll throw you off this tower and be done with you."
"We are the good guys," Thea said reassuringly. After a moment, the lead dwarf nodded and returned his axe to its holster at his back.
"Very well," he said. "Come," he told the others, and they strode back to the doorway.
"Clarion!" the female dwarf shouted up, and there was a snarl as a silver dragon ceased spewing its gaseous cloud. They could hear Zephyros coughing, but still alive and unseen. The dragon screeched and took flight, drifting around the tower and down to the balcony, where he pumped his wings and stared at the dwarves.
"Sorry about your friend," the female dwarf said, gesturing to Opal, who was pale and unconscious, but alive, Rune's duplicate still hovering over her.
Rune nodded unhappily, and the dwarves made their exit, crawling into the dragon's open talons, which then closed gently around them. With a final roar, the silver dragon allowed the blowing wind to catch his wings like a sail, and he disappeared into the heavy clouds.
"Zephyros," Killian shouted, "are you all right?"
There was a groan, and the giant appeared floating 10 feet above them and rubbing his head.
"I hate dragons," he said.
Rune ran to Opal and quickly healed the Genasi, whose big eyes soon opened to blink up at him. "Oh, hello," she said dreamily. Glad you're okay, Rune said, patting her on the shoulder and standing up. The Genasi sat up so she was of a height to him and said, with a smile,
Next time, I'm turning into a rhinoceros.
Rune laughed. After a 10-day and a half of travel, the companions finally arrived at Tribor, well-rested and anxious to be on their way. Despite their two strange encounters upon the Cloud Giant's Tower, they were, for the most part, extremely bored of their time spent in the clouds and happy to finally be back on solid ground. Outside of the town on the forest's edge, they climbed down the steep stairs, 1,000 feet down, until they reached the earth. Killian gratefully reached a hand down and swept it through the grass as if to reassure himself that it wasn't a dream. Upon departing Zephyros' company, the sailor had reminded him to stay away from dwarves and dragons, which he happily agreed to. They entered Tribor on the main road and noted the general shabbiness of the town immediately. It was a scorched ruin being held together by straw, mud, and the dreary consistency of those who lived there. To say the citizens of Tribor were peasants was a generous term. They were downright homeless-looking. They shuffled quietly between buildings and alleyways, looking down and avoiding interaction. The hopelessness was tangible.
"Excuse me," Thea said, taking the arm of a young woman in a tattered brown dress as she walked, a tightly wrapped babe pressed to her chest. She looked up in surprise at the tall elf with the long black hair. "Where might we find a woman by the name of Alestra?"
That was the name of the woman whose ex-husband had died in the attack on Nightstone, the one they were sent to find.
"Alestra," the woman thought for a moment. "Ah, the one who owns Lionshare with her husband?"
"Lionshare?" Killian asked.
"It's a good store." She pointed them down a road, then hurried off after Thea thanked her.
"Okay," Killian said softly as they walked. "Let's remember to break this to her gently." "It's her ex-husband," Rune pointed out. "She's remarried by the sound of it."
"Still," the sailor said.
They approached the low building with a swinging sign that read, Lionshare, Goods and Parcels, carved with a lion standing on its hind legs.
"Here it is," Killian said as he opened the door and they filed through.
Excuse me," Evelyn said, approaching a dark-featured man sitting behind a counter. "Could I sell you some stuff?"
Killian looked annoyed, but allowed the girl to sell a few of the weapons she had taken from the defeated cultists in the tower. She took the gold pieces carefully in her hands, placing them reverently in her newly acquired coin purse. When she was finished, the sailor cleared his throat.
"We're looking for Alestra. Is she here?"
"What is it you want with my wife?"
the man asked suspiciously, folding his arms.
"What's your name?" Thea asked in a friendly voice.
North Tezrin," said the man.
"We have news for your wife," the elf told him, her expression turning grim. North eyed her carefully, then nodded and called for Alestra. A minute later, there was some shuffling from a back room, and a door creaked open as she entered, carrying a heavy crate. Alestra had frizzy blonde hair tied into a messy bun. Her eyes crinkled with friendly lines as she greeted them all.
"What can I help you with?"
she asked, somewhat out of breath as she heaved the box down.
"Hello," Opal said in her sing-song voice, stepping up. "My name is Opal."
"Opal,"
the woman said, somewhat surprised by the strange group before her, a mixture of races not often seen in concert with one another.
"What can I do for you?"
"How do you feel about your husband?"
"Ex-husband," Rune cut in.
"Ex-husband," Opal corrected.
"How do you feel about him?"
Alestra looked between the Genasi and Gnome in confusion.
Well?
She glanced over at Narth, whose mouth had turned down.
"What exactly are you?"
"Do you have good feelings about him?"
Opal clarified, smiling. Killian looked as if he wanted to create a tornado where Opal stood.
"I mean, he's a decent man, I suppose," Alestra stuttered.
"Well, I'm sorry to tell you that he's dead,"
Opal said abruptly.
Dead? What do you mean? What happened?"
"Here, let me explain," Rune said in a relaxed tone to Opal, who looked surprised by the woman's reaction. "I'm the sensitive one," he assured her. "Your ex-husband was in Nightstone, yes?"
Yes, she said, hand covering her mouth.
"There was an attack on the town. Well, first it was attacked by cloud giants. They were throwing giant rocks down on the townspeople, squashing them into sauce. Then there were some orcs. Oh, and goblins. No, wait," Rune paused thoughtfully, speaking quickly. "Actually, the goblins came before the orcs. Well, so really, he died because of the first thing, the giants, because after that, the townspeople were kidnapped and brought to a cave, and some of them were tortured. Actually, there was even one guy who was eaten alive. Ah, yes," he said, noticing Alestra's and Narth's expressions of horror. "But that wasn't your ex. No, no. He would have died quite quickly, I suspect. I mean, we can't know for sure. We weren't there."
"Rune," Killian said, exasperated.
Rune ignored him. "So, yeah, he was likely squished by a massive rock. It just fell right on his head. Instant." Quite unlucky if you think about it. He paused thoughtfully. Anyways, one minute he was there, the next minute he wasn't. The gnome shrugged. Alestra turned and vomited on the floor. Narth placed a hand on his wife's heaving shoulders and pointed the other at the door. Out! He shouted angrily. Get out! They rushed out of the door, Killian and Thea dragging Opal out after them. She looked confused. I thought we explained that quite well, she told them once they were outside on the street. We should have sent a pigeon, Thea muttered. Killian shook his head. Next time, he breathed, stabbing a finger at Rune's chest. Someone else does the talking. Rune shrugged. I thought I was quite the wordsmith.
Maybe we should have planned out what we were going to say while we were stuck in a tower for 15 days, Evelyn said softly.
Probably a good idea for next time, Rune agreed. I don't think there will be a next time, Thea said, looking back at the lion chair anxiously. Come on, let's find a place to stay for the night. I could use a drink, Rune sighed. Let's find the dingiest place in town and get drunk.
Why dingy? Evelyn asked curiously.
Because, Rune said, that's where you get the best local gossip. Plus, he smiled, the booze is cheaper. Fine, Thea said eventually, but I would rather not sleep there. She flipped back her hair. It's about time we stay somewhere decent. Killian nodded, seemingly over the incident in the shop. I would like to find out more about these supposed fire giant attacks. I don't see evidence for anything recent, but perhaps there is news from the borders. With that, they soon found themselves entering a half-standing shack called the Talking Troll. When they stepped in, Rune took in the stale scent of spilled ale, piss, and unwashed men. Ah, he sighed appreciatively, just where I belong. Thea wrinkled her nose and pointed to a hole in the roof where pigeons flitted about. The splintered wooden floor had bird droppings all over it. Hold on to your coin purses, Killian whispered. I always do when Rune's around, Thea said, glancing over at the gnome, who smirked. The bar had a handful of patrons in various states of drunkenness. The oldest one snoring in the corner, his head on the table and half a mug of ale in his loose grip. Killian and Thea stepped up to the bar and the sailor ordered 5 ales. I'll have your best cup of wine, the elf said. That'll be 1 gold for a cup, the bartender told her, eyeing her lithe figure with a groping gaze. All right, Thea said. Your second best cup of wine. The bartender nodded. Just 4 ales, then, Killian said. Still 5 ales, Rune corrected, standing up on tiptoes near the bar. When Killian gave him a look, he shrugged. It's been a rough couple of hours. When the ales came, Rune quickly took 2 large mugs and expertly dodged tables, wet spots, and upturned chairs to the table Opal and Evelyn had reserved for them. Opal had a pigeon perched on the crook of her arm and was currently chatting to it animatedly. Rune sat and immediately chugged half his ale, wiping the foam from his mouth with a satisfied belch. Disgusting, Thea said, sitting across from him. Killian sat and studied their surroundings, assessing the locals. This town is in rough shape. He spotted a man across the small room, semi-drunk and dressed in a shabby, priestly garb. I'm going to speak with him, Killian said. Find out what I can about the giants. Before Rune could protest, he took the 2nd ale from the gnome's hand and went to seat himself next to the priest. Rolling his eyes, Rune finished the rest of his ale and trotted over to listen to the conversation. Silvarian Loomshank, the man was saying with a slight drawl. Whether from drunkenness or an accent, it was difficult to say. I'm Killian, the sailor introduced himself. Tell me, why is this town in such ruins? I see no evidence of recent attacks, but it has me wondering. That's right, the priest nodded his gray head and gestured to the hole in the tavern ceiling. There were attacks a couple of years ago. Most people's is too... he hiccuped. Too lazy or too damn poor to fix any of it. What was the attack? The man shrugged. Fire giants, from what I've heard. Not sure. Just got here myself. And you've seen none yourself? Rune cut in excitedly. The priest looked down at him in surprise, having not noticed him before. No fire giants here, he grumbled. Have you heard rumors of giants in the area? Killian prodded. We were told there were some near Tribor. That's why we came out this way. I've been traveling this way from Neverwinter, the priest said. Banished! Bah! Can you believe it? Anyways, he sighed. I've heard rumors like you, but no giants. Can't see why you'd be chasing them anyhow. Fate, it would seem, Rune said seriously, and the priest nodded in understanding. Killian sighed, disappointed. Very well. Thank you for your time. Thanks for the ale, the priest raised the mug, then finished it in 2 sweeping gulps. Where are you headed next? Rune asked. Not sure as to that, he said. I was a priest of Helm, but now Rune nodded sympathetically.
Religious people, right?
Cheers to that, the priest boomed, suddenly emphatic. He raised his mug and went to take a drink, then realized it was empty and slammed it back down onto the table, muttering.
Right, Killian said, placing a hand on Rune's shoulder. Let's get out of here.
They next made their way to a two-story, somewhat leaning structure that looked to be the most official building in the town, which was not promising. There were no guards as they entered the creaking front doors and stepped inside the dimly lit, dust-filled space. The room had a few small, high windows with cracked glass, allowing some daylight to filter through. Untidy bookshelves lined the walls, and in the back of the room was a tall, lantern-lit desk with a large tapestry behind it depicting three black boars. Beneath that was a dying fireplace and a woman hunched over the desk, reading from a stack of papers. Rune ran up to the desk, which was much too tall for him to see over, and stood on his toes to tap his hand on the desk. His hand came back sticky, and he popped a finger into his mouth. Is that apple pie I taste? He asked curiously, stepping back and wiping his hand clean on his trousers. Hello, Killian said, drawing the woman's attention up. She had curly, dark hair, thick eyebrows, and pale skin. She had a square jaw and jade-green eyes. When she stood to greet them, Rune could see she was, on all accounts, a handsome woman. Hello, she said, sparing a long glance for Rune, who waved innocently. I'm Killian, Killian introduced himself, offering his hand to her, which she took. And these are my companions, Thea, Opal, Evelyn, and Rune.
Dorathra Chandrel, Lord Protector of Tribor, she said.
We have just traveled from Nightstone with news of an attack by cloud giants upon the town, Killian told her.
Cloud giants, the woman said in surprise. That does not bode well. We've heard rumors of giants of late, but as for them attacking...
She nodded her head, as though deciding something.
Yes, well, thank you for this news. What exactly have you heard about the giants? Thea asked.
The Lord Protector shook her head.
Only that villages in the north are claiming attacks. We've had a few refugees come to the town in search of shelter and work.
Speaking of work, Killian said, we are mercenaries, tracking the giants, but also looking for income to help us in our journeys. Tell me, do you know of any jobs? She shook her head again.
I'm afraid I don't know. You'd have to go to the Tribal Travelers. That's where all the caravans pass through.
She paused reluctantly.
Speak to Ulam Stockspool. He's not the friendliest of men, but if there's work, he'll find it for you.
Very well, Killian dipped his head. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the news, Dorathra said carefully.
As the group closed the door behind them, the Lord Protector quickly thumbed through her stack of letters until she found the one addressed to her and stamped with a red symbol depicting a sword and snake. She tore the letter from the open envelope and pressed it under both hands, rereading the message in the dim lamplight. When she was done reading, she straightened and took a deep breath. Then she crumpled the letter and threw it in the fireplace, watching the paper catch and shrivel into blackened ash.
Well, that wasn't overly helpful, Rune sighed as they headed to the Ever Wyvern House.
They had found directions to the finest lodgings in Tribor from an elderly gentleman sweeping the streets.
It seems no one has any hard evidence that the giants have attacked, other than a few refugees from the north, the sailor said in frustration. And the more north we travel, the less work there is to find.
I'm running low on funds, Rune admitted. There's been no one to gamble with for ages. They came upon the manicured lawn of the Ever Wyvern House. The pathway was made of smooth, matched stone and lined with pink and white flowers. The house itself looked to be freshly painted and stark white, with blue and yellow designs painted into the eaves. The door was made of dark, polished wood, and two tall, finely dressed women stood in front of it, quietly sipping crystal glasses of rosé.
Does anyone else feel like there's something wrong about this place?
Thea asked awkwardly as they eyed the house from afar, surrounded, as it was, by peasant shops. I think we may have to disguise ourselves to get in, Rune said, eyeing Evelyn's clothing in particular. Hopefully we can afford it. With a flourish of his hand, he cast a disguising illusion over himself and looked down to admire his handiwork. He wore finely cut golden robes and his fingers and ears sparkled with gems. His usually frazzled hair was slicked back and braided with colorful ribbons. All right, here's the plan. You're all my servants, except for Thea, he said, gesturing to the noble elf woman. You, he smiled, are my trophy wife. Thea crossed her arms. You're... what?
There, you'll do great, Rune said happily, then trotted up the pathway toward the house.
They all slowly ascended the stairs behind him, anxious about how out of place the building was compared to the rest of the shabby town of Tribor. Rune dipped his head to each of the women at the door. They didn't respond, but one of the women pushed the door open and gestured for them to enter. The room was brightly lit and scattered with tall tables and people so finely dressed it was hard to look at one for too long, lest your brain be scrambled by the overwhelming number of patterns on them.
"Where did all these rich people come from?"
Evelyn whispered.
"That's a good question," Thea said seriously.
"I'm going to go pickpocket one of them," Rune said, and at Thea's look he clarified, "I want to check and see if I can figure out why they're here." His trophy elf wife nodded. "I'll distract that one," she said, pointing her nose to a tall, slightly balding man in a bronze and red robe. He was standing at a table, speaking to a slightly shorter man with a smooth-shaven face and shoulder-length blonde hair.
"Excuse me,"
Thea said flirtatiously as she strode over to the man, drawing his attention away from the other man, who muttered and turned away to speak with someone else.
"Who do I speak to about getting a room at this fine establishment?"
The man seemed to step into her right away, confident and alluring. Rune mimed vomiting to Killian and the rest, who were standing a little too straight for supposed servants. Then, Rune ducked under the table and slipped a hand into the man's robes. He felt the coin purse immediately and drew it out, opening it and dumping the small contents into his palm. 3 copper coins. That was all. Wrinkling his head, he placed the empty coin purse back into the man's robes and slipped away. Thea noticed and cordially excused herself from the conversation.
"Well?"
she asked, bending down to speak with him. Rune opened his hand to show her the 3 coppers.
"That's it?"
"No identification, no papers," he said, "and no money."
"Perhaps it's all with his servants?" she asked.
Rune shook his head. "It's strange." They tried it with one more patron and found the same thing, only a few small coppers. They returned to their companions just as the blonde man with the smooth face walked up to Killian.
"Pardon me, man, can I help you?"
Yes, Killian said, trying to sound demure but looking stupidly handsome and in charge despite himself. "I would like 2 rooms, Rune announced, stepping up to the man with a sweepingly dramatic gesture, allowing his golden robes to sparkle in the light. "One for me and my servants," he said, "and 1 for my wife and hers." He gestured to Thea, who put her nose in the air.
"Wife," the man said, taken aback for a moment by the sheer size difference of the two of them. "Very well," he recovered quickly. "It shall be 30 gold, 15 for each room."
"Killian," Rune said, snapping a finger, "be a good lad and pay the man." Reluctantly, the sailor reached for his belt and took out some gold, handing it first to Rune, who quickly noticed there was only 20 coins. "Ah, yes, I suppose I shall have the other 10, he said. Then, in a falsely conspiratorial tone, said to the blonde man, "Can't trust servants with too much gold, eh?"
"Right you are," the man said stiffly, and Rune passed him the full amount.
"Wonderful," he said in a flat tone. "I shall take you to your rooms."
This isn't creepy at all, Rune thought sarcastically.
As the man led their small group to a hallway and down a few doors, he said,
"With the purchase of each room, you, of course, have your choice of complimentary companionship."
"Naturally," Rune said, and Thea seemed to perk up. Rune gave her a pointed look, and she shrugged with a small smile. He heard Evelyn over his shoulder whisper over to Opal,
"What does that mean?" "I have no idea," Opal said back quietly, "but it sounds nice."
"All right," Rune said when the man left them with the rooms. "Men in 1 room, girls in the other." "Women," Thea said, handing Killian some gold for the room, which he happily put in his coin purse. "Sorry about that," Rune said to the sailor. "I got a bit carried away with the roll."
"It was convincing," his friend said with a half smile.
"Evie, Opal, I'll need you to stay out of the room for a few hours," Thea said. "Can you do that?"
"Why?" Evelyn asked innocently.
"Because," Thea said casually, "I'm ordering a companion to our room, and it's not for the viewership of a younger audience."
"But I'm not that yet."
"Don't worry, we can order food to our room," Rune told her, and Thea smiled and strode off back into the main room. "I want to sneak into the servants' quarters once everyone's asleep," Rune announced. "I don't think these richly dressed people are as well off as they appear." Killian nodded his head.
"That may be wise. I would like to go with you and figure out why this place is so odd."
"I'm coming too," Evelyn said. "Me too," Opal smiled.
Thea came prancing back then, pulling a finely dressed man by the hand behind her.
"This is Caro," the man said with a handsome smile.
"That's right. Now, don't bother us," she said, and they disappeared into one of the rooms.
"I have a sneaking suspicion," Killian said seriously, "that we are some of the only guests in this place."
"And all of those rich people in the foyer?" Rune said.
"I think they're like Caro,"
Rune nodded, because he knew it was true. Evening set in, and the rooms down the hallway quieted. It seemed there were a few other guests partaking in the fine establishment, though none quite so enthusiastic as Thea. Rune maintained his disguised appearance and led the way out of the hallway. The four of them snuck down a winding set of stairs into a small room. On one wall hanged the same caliber of fine clothing that was worn by the people in the main part of the house. On the other, peasant clothing.
"We were right," Killian said with displeasure. "The,
he looked at Evelyn and Opal.
"Companions. They're commoners.
Likely trying to scrape together a living from those who pass through the town," Rune said. "Refugees and people who couldn't find work anywhere else."
"Set up here to draw in the tourists," Killian sighed heavily. "People like us."
"Well, we paid enough for the rooms," Rune pointed out, gesturing to the rack of fine clothes. Killian immediately pulled a cloak from the hanger and drew it over himself. Rune reached up and took a silk hat, pulling it over his hair. Evelyn touched a hand to one of the dresses, pressing the silk to her face. "It's soft," she said.
"Take it," Rune offered. The girl dropped it and shook her head.
"Right. Well, I could use a meal, and I'd rather not spend a fortune. Let's see if we can snag a couple of loaves of bread from the kitchen."
"Should we be stealing?" Opal asked, voice quivering.
"We're stealing from the rich bastard who owns this place," Rune explained, "not the commoners." Trusting as ever, Opal nodded and Rune ran ahead to the stairs. The cook turned his head up to stare at the gnome as he stumbled in.
Oh, hello, Rune squeaked, not expecting someone to be in the kitchens this late.
"What are you doing in here?" the cook demanded, dropping his ladle. Rune ripped the hat from his head, his illusion still intact.
"Well, you see," he spoke quickly, excitedly, "I was chasing after my companion. She scampered off in a game of hide and catch. She mentioned at some point that she was looking for butter. Gods know for what use, I can only imagine," he winked at the astounded cook. "Anyway, she's completely without clothing and I have no idea where she might be. Say, you haven't seen her around, have you? Reddish hair, about this tall," he pointed up at the ceiling. "And, oh, did I mention she was nude?"
The cook's face had turned a brilliant color of red as he stammered,
I haven't seen anyone who..."
"Brilliant," Rune grinned, casting a sidelong glance to one of the counters, where a few loaves of bread sat uneaten. "I'll just take one of these, then, and be gone."
"You will do no such thing," the cook blustered.
Rune snatched up one of the loaves and ripped off a large chunk with his teeth, chewing.
"Thank you very much," Rune said, mouthful,
then turned and raced back up the stairs before the cook could catch him. Finally, swallowing the large chunk of bread at the top of the stairs, where Killian and the others waited, about to come down the stairs themselves, Rune said, "That went well, I think." The following morning, they left the brothel behind and made for the Tribor travelers in search of Erlam. Thea graciously thanked Carlo as they stepped out into the day, and they didn't inform her about the companions being commoners until they were well away from the Ever Wyvern house. She agreed it was troubling, but pointed out that the experience was very rich, even if Carlo was not. Rune chalked her actions up to grief still for the loss of her elf man, but he had to admit he knew very little about the wizard, nor what life she'd led before they'd met. The Tribor Travelers was an open yard with a few scattered buildings where carts and wagons were being pulled up, unloaded, repaired, and reloaded with supplies. They asked around for Erlam stock spool and were pointed over to a stack of crates, where a man was turned away from them and inspecting the crates. When Killian said his name, the man turned in their direction. Erlam Stockspool was a man of average height, with short-cropped black hair and loose-fitted clothing. Over one eye, he wore a red eye patch with an insignia branded on the leather.
"That's..."
Rune coughed in surprise. The insignia matched the one Sulcan had so proudly carried through Nightstone when he and his people took over the town. It was the Zhentarim emblem. Killian recovered more quickly than Rune and spoke up.
"We are mercenaries traveling from Nightstone, looking for work. We were told we might find some here."
The man folded his thick arms and shook his head.
"No work for mercenaries these days. We've had too many troubles with waylaid caravans."
"What was the cause of this?" Thea asked curiously. The man looked the elf up and down as if unimpressed.
"If you must know, there were giant attacks."
"Giants?" Rune said with interest. "Do you know what kind?"
"The big kind," the man said stupidly and started to turn away.
"Wait," Rune said. "We're pals with one of your Zhentarims."
"Sulcan?"
"We helped him get back the townspeople of Nightstone." Erlam looked around curiously.
"Where'd you have to get them back from?"
"They were kidnapped," Opal said lightly, "by goblins."
"Couldn't rule a town without the people," Rune added. "So we helped him get them back, and now we're, well, I don't want to speak for Sulcan, but we're basically best friends with him."
"Right," Killian said. "So how about work for Friends of the Zhentarims?"
"Huh,
Well, the man scratched his chin. I suppose we could.
Suddenly, there was a loud sound, like something heavy slamming into the earth. The noise was quickly followed by screams of terror, and people started running past. Slam! Crack! Horses whinnied in terror and began stomping their hooves in the dirt. Some broke free, their harnesses snapping as they bolted. The building behind them exploded into pieces as a massive boulder fell onto its straw-thatched roof. Rune felt Killian's hand reach around his arm and drag him out of the open. The sorcerer pressed the gnome against a low wall and peeked up.
Giants! Someone yelled. The giants are attacking!
Found them, Rune gasped, his entire body trembling. Killian summoned his storm. You've been listening to The Giant's Gamble by Alexis Fienendahl and based on the Storm King's Thunder D&D campaign. For more stories written by me, you can visit my blog at alexisfienendahl.com or click the link provided in the show notes. You can also subscribe to my podcast so you can keep hearing stories by me. Thanks for listening.